Lucas Meyer, straight to the dome, one of our political analysts and all-stars, leading Democrat strategist in our state and region. Good morning, Lucas.
Good morning, Jack.
All right. Not surprising, we had Anna Brown, Citizens Count, on Monday saying that this was something to watch on Wednesday, expecting it would go that way. But ramifications in the governor's race early on or not?
Oh, certainly. I mean, it's always important to take a step back. Not everyone has the continuity that you and I have, Jack, with some of these votes. But before 2010, this executive council vote on this exact contract was a very sleepy vote. Republicans would vote for it. Democrats would vote for it. Because ultimately what this is about health care for folks in the state. And New Hampshire does have one of the lowest unintended pregnancy and teen pregnancy rates in the country. So by virtue of this executive council rejecting this contract, and it's not just Planned Parenthood, it's Lovering Health Center, Equality Health Center, places that do family planning services to help prevent unintended pregnancies, keep teen pregnancies low, deliver cancer screening. Like, these are very important healthcare services that an executive council rejected for literally no good reason other than a perception, other than a theory. There's nothing real behind this vote for a real reason to oppose it other than a partisan agenda, which, and folks who listen every week know I tend to be a broken record here, but this does trace back to gerrymandering. The executive council statewide, Democrats won 52% of the vote in the executive council races across the state, but they control 20% of that chamber. The people of New Hampshire would like to see this contract approved. The extreme partisan decision to reject it absolutely plays into what will be a huge issue in this race, which is reproductive health care. And both former Senator Ayotte and Chuck Morse, as they go through campaigns or through their campaigns, are going to time and again be confronted with this issue. Certainly, I've seen Kelly Ayotte flip-flop and kind of try and find a squishy middle on issues, you know, be it her support for President Trump in 2016. She was with him, and then she was against him, and then she was with him. So there's going to be a lot of tap dancing and tiptoeing on this issue. Meanwhile, Democrats, be it Councillor Warmington or Mayor Joyce Craig, are going to be running aggressive, very clear, very articulate messages that they will protect health care access, be it abortions, be it these kind of health screenings. So this will be a conversation that comes up time and again. And then I would also look at the executive council races. Even though those districts are very gerrymandered and incredibly hard for Democrats to win, this will be a motivating issue. And we'll see, you know, are there places like in Manchester, you know, former mayor, current councillor Ted Gatsis, you know, that is a vulnerable seat that is trending towards Democrats, even though that gerrymander is fresh. And is there another district that can be targeted to pick off? Because these will be motivating issues for in a race like an executive council where normally, you know, previous to 2010, people wouldn't pay attention.
Lucas, I want to just ask a question, staying on the governor's picture for a moment. You and I and J-Dog have had fun in the past talking sports, NFL. You're a football fan. J-Dog coming up a little bit later on. He and Josh from Beeson do their pick six. So if you're doing a sort of a pick six over under, you know, looking at Craig Warmington. Warmington, Craig is the two big Democrats running for governor. And there are others, but, I mean, they're the main ones you look at in terms of organization, name recognition, and support. What's the over-under here? Do you have a sense yet on who's kind of, is one person sort of got a little bit of an edge here on the Democrat side, or is it too early to tell?
I mean, it's a great question because we are on the precipice of a very important marker in this primary, which will be the financial filings, which will come out, I believe, next week or maybe the week after, where campaigns are required by state law to disclose and report how much money they've raised and how much money they've spent. So this will be a big marker, not only for who raises the most, but also how they're raising their money. Is one candidate having more success at a grassroots level with small dollar donations, while other candidates maybe have success with larger dollar donor checks, as well as like the number and how much they are burning, their burn rate. So, you know, You always want to check cash flow, see how much they have in the bank. We've heard anecdotally that, you know, Senator Ayotte certainly having spent the past, however, 6-7 years on some pretty serious corporate boards, be it News Corp, John Deere, I'm pretty sure BAE. I mean, these are some real corporate power players. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see her rake in some real big corporate money, which, you know, then becomes a political liability for her as this race progresses. So at least on the Democratic side, that's what I'm keeping my eyes peeled for. I don't really have a sense at the moment who's out in front. Mm-hmm. I will say they are matching each other in a messaging campaign, sort of, if you can see behind the scenes, you know, when an endorsement comes out, the other team is releasing another list of supporters. So they're running pretty, like, you know, pretty early heavy campaigns, which as a Democrat in the state, I'm excited about, because this will be our opportunity to, you know, put up a firewall again. So
I want to switch over to the Republican side in the governor's race. Before I do, though, because it kind of leads to that. Stay with me for a moment. Lucas Meyer, straight to the dome, Democrat perspective and analyst and strategist. Lucas, I'm looking at this presidential primary race. Arguably, Donald Trump has the big lead here before January, Tuesday, the 23rd, in terms of the first in the nation primary of the Republican race. Presumably, Governor Sununu will make an endorsement, I'm guessing, by next Tuesday. And I'm guessing it's probably, although I don't know, but it's probably Nikki Haley. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Does that, with independent voters and Nikki Haley, there's a pack that's going to start targeting independent voters in the Republican primary for Nikki Haley. There's a pack, you know, Trump's got efforts going here. But does Sununu's endorsement of a Nikki Haley as it pertains to that Trump lead, does it matter much or not, if you had to say? Because that leads to a second question I have on the governor's race.
I mean, it's interesting. I think there was a poll out recently, and I'm blanking on who ran it, but it asked this question of, what's your opinion of Governor Sununu? People said they liked them. And then those same people in that poll said, but it doesn't matter to me who, it'll impact me none where he endorses. Mm-hmm. We've seen this down ballot in previous races. I think it'll make for some television ads and some mail pieces that say, you know, Governor Sununu endorsed, but I don't think it will have any bearing on, maybe a couple people. I don't think it'll be a measurable bump. And honestly, you know, if I'm a betting man, I'm still betting on Trump to win that primary at the end of the day. So what are the repercussions down the road for folks who endorse against Trump come the general?
Well, that leads to my second question. And that is, in the governor's race, you just gave some great analysis on Craig and Warmington. Let's talk about Morse and Kelly Ayotte, the two big Republican names. And again, there may be others, but the two big, you know, well-known names, former U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte, former Senate President and U.S. Senate candidate Morse. Who has the upper hand in your mind? Insiders would say Ayotte has gotten a lot of big name support and supporters, Morse too, but maybe Ayotte a little more. But statewide name recognition, probably Ayotte a little more, but they're both very well known in Republican primary circles. How important in that gubernatorial race, if Trump does well and wins the primary, if he's the big name in New Hampshire in the Republican Party, if he were to play in that gubernatorial race, and he may not be able to resist it, if Sununu weighs in the primary trying to go after him with a candidate, presumably one of the governors, how big would a Republican a Trump endorsement be for one of those two? And presumably, Morse might have the upper hand given the history there. What are your thoughts?
I mean, speaking plainly, Jack, I mean, when the cult leader endorses, the cult follows behind him. I mean, that is like the brand of Trump. People blindly follow him where he goes, and that's 33% of the Republican base. I would assume, I have no reason to think they wouldn't, go along in a primary with, you know, and I would imagine it'd be Morse. I don't imagine, you know, Trump would want to endorse Ayotte. I don't know if Ayotte would want Trump's endorsement. I think this is where that inter-party tension is going to be a real headache for Republicans. And people want to look at the Democratic Party now with the primary and the write-ins, all this turmoil. That's a much ado about nothing. There really isn't any consternation within the party about this. That dynamic in those primaries is a nightmare for those campaigns, whether they admit it now or they don't, especially with God knows how many. It's impossible to keep track of how many different cases are coming up and when verdicts will be and when juries are being selected. All of these things will continue to be a headache and a drag on the Republican Party, which is presumably why you saw Americans for Prosperity, the big Koch-funded group, throw their weight in an endorsement behind Nikki Haley, which I believe is the first time they've done that. So there is, and that to me is a very real reflection of an anxiety that Donald Trump will be the nominee and will be a weight dragging down the rest of the Republican Party at state-level races and federal races.
Anything happen in either one of the two congressional district matchups coming up? We don't have a big U.S. Senate race in 2024 here. We have the first district, Chris Pappas, the incumbent, and you have the second district, Ann Custer, and they do have challenges, but we're not hearing as much about those. Is it just too early?
A little too early. The Republican candidates are still being hashed out. I know the first district has a number of candidates who have announced. But I think from a Democratic perspective, you have the chair of the political committee, Hakeem Jeffries, coming to New Hampshire tomorrow for a fundraising dinner, which is a reflection that despite, you know, people hear me talk about this week after week, like the congressional districts in the state are very competitive. Republicans have done an abysmal job of both recruiting candidates to run and then nominating the right candidate or the most competitive candidate in their primaries to run against our incumbents. So Democrats still treat these as frontline races. Obviously, Congresswoman Custer has achieved some chair positions within the party, within the caucus, is a behemoth fundraising. Congressman Pappas, same situation, has built up a really credible, strong narrative and image and brand in the first district, which is and it hasn't swung in a while, but it used to be the swingiest district and will be again at some point. Depending on whatever Congressman Pappas's plans are. But that being said, no matter who Republicans nominate, these campaigns have to be run uniquely to their districts, unique right. messages with their own campaign, which require their own resources. So those are still frontline races. Those will still attract a lot of money, both inside the state and outside the state. So, yeah, the dynamics haven't changed there.
All right, before we let you go, you and I could do a podcast because we are the only probably two who can talk the politics and then do the football smack. So here you go. I'm not saying the Patriots are your team, but let's talk. J-Dog's doing his pick six in the next hour with Josh from VEASAN. They're very good at this. Patriots Chargers this weekend. Don't even get me going on the last few games. I don't really care. I think Zappe has to be the starter at this point. It's almost like abuse to see Mac Jones go in there anymore. Does it matter? Do they even get a win the rest of the year?
I mean, Belichick in no world is going to coach that team to lose. Their defense is still, like, very good. I mean, I'm a Giants fan. That game was a little tough to watch on all fronts last week.
Yep.
But they're still the defensive juggernaut of a team. Belichick is still, like, his guy. I'm not a Pats fan, but, like, you still got to respect Belichick. Anyone calling for his head, I think, is, like, delusional as far as what that guy has done for Patriots Nation. I mean, I think it's like the NFL. Every week, any given Sunday, yeah. a team can pull it out. So I don't think anyone's coaching to lose here. And I certainly wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to be on a team that was coached to lose. I don't forget draft picks. Those are boom or bust. Play the game in front of you, and I think that defense can put them in any game.
All right, Lucas, thank you very much. And, of course, you're loving the DeVito story if you're in the Giant. I mean, what a great story. His family, his parents.
It's a great story. I love it.
Isn't it? It's almost like a movie. They did a thing last week where he went to high school, his home 12 miles from the stadium, and then his parents up there going nuts because their son's won two in a row as a starter. Reminds me of the movie when Wahlberg made, you know, he played.
I was going to say, I'm sure Wahlberg is working on his chops right now for that movie.
Yeah, Vince Papale with the Eagles, the bartender. All right, thank you, Lucas.
Thank you, Jack.